Welcome to the Regulatory Transparency Project's Fourth Branch podcast series. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Hello, and welcome to episode number 4 of the Tech Roundup podcast, which is part of the Federalist Society's Regulatory Transparency Project's ongoing Fourth Branch podcast series. Our Tech Roundup podcasts feature leading policy experts debating the major legal issues surrounding various emerging technology sectors. My name is Adam Thier, and I'm a senior research fellow with the Mercatus Center at George Mason University, and I'll be your host for today's discussion. On today's episode, we'll be examining what for me is one of the most interesting issues in the world of technology policy, the question of how to balance federalism, interstate commerce, and technological innovation in our modern economy. Matter of fact, that was the topic of the first of my 9 books that I wrote 20 years ago when I was with the Heritage Foundation. And 2 decades later, I'm still struggling with how to strike that balance, especially as exciting new technologies pop up, like unmanned aerial systems or drones, which is what will be the subject of today's show. What's the best way to govern a fast-moving field like drones? Do we need sweeping federal regulations mandating a single set of rules for the entire nation? Or might there be another alternative involving decentralized governance of drones at the state level? To help us navigate these issues today, I'm joined by my colleague Brent Skorup, who is also a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center, and who is an expert on these issues. Most recently, Brent co-authored an essay entitled "To Kickstart Drone Deliveries, Give Cities and States Regulatory Flexibility," which highlighted an important new legislative proposal that would grant states authority to regulate drone operations below 200 feet off the ground. That proposal could potentially pave the way for interesting competitive federalism solutions to drones and airspace management. We're also extremely excited to be joined here today by a very special guest, Senator Mike Lee, who represents Utah in the U.S. Senate, and who is the author of that legislative proposal I just mentioned, which is formally entitled the Drone Integration and Zoning Act of 2019. Senator Lee is a tireless advocate for constitutionally limited government, fiscal responsibility, individual liberty, and economic prosperity. And his new bill offers a potentially innovative alternative policy approach to getting more drones off the ground throughout the United States. So let me turn directly to Senator Lee and first thank him for joining us on the show today, and then ask him to explain a little bit before jumping into the details of his new bill, what got him interested in this issue of drones and the policy issues surrounding them. Senator, welcome.
Thanks so much. It's really good to be with you, and it's especially refreshing to see you so interested in this issue, which I consider very important. As you noted, there's been some regulatory uncertainty in the area of drones. UAS technology is rapidly developing, and our technology has the ability to evolve faster than our current regulatory system can handle. And as a result of that, we worry about technological innovation being chilled. So that's why we want to make clear, we want to set some clear boundaries between what is state and what is federal. This is an area where, unlike commercial aviation, where you've got flights taking off and where you've got typically a plane taking off in one state and landing in another in an integrated interstate airspace that's a channel or instrumentality of interstate commerce, with drone flights, you have aspects of federal interests where you have drones entering the stream of commerce, sometimes interstate. Close to the ground, you have purely local interests. A machine that can hover just inches above the ground and can peer directly into someone's window right outside of their bedroom obviously implicates property interests and the sorts of interests that are typically vindicated and defended at the local level. So my bill, the Drone Integration and Zoning Act, tries to reconcile these interests and tries to solve some of the thorny legal questions by approaching drone integration with cooperative federalism.
Well, that's exciting. And Brent, let me turn to you now and ask you to elaborate on the senator's proposal and for the potential for cooperative federalism to offer us a potential solution to break the logjam in the United States that's holding back drone innovation.
Sure. And I want to thank the senator for joining us and for his leadership on this issue. As as you said, I mean, this area is moving very rapidly, and the regulatory tools that worked in the past for aviation, they're really under stress with drones and drone delivery, and what companies are coming out with. And on the federalism question, this is kind of my latest research area. I think it's a fascinating area. I mean, it ties in common law and property rights and the role of states. And what I found with some help from some research assistants, we've been looking at how states have regulated airspace in the past, and there is precedent for this. And how I see it, I can't speak for the senator, but many of the principles in his bill codify existing custom and practice, and things like, for instance, there over 20 states have expressly vest property rights to airspace with landowners on the ground. There's the famous Cosby case from the 1940s, where the Supreme Court said that property owners own the immediate reaches, that's a quote, immediate reaches above their land, and that raises the question, what is the immediate reaches? That's never been solved. And I think in this world of drones hovering at low altitudes, that needs to be figured out. There are things, I'm kind of an odd issue, but when I've looked at states give municipalities and counties rights to airspace above public roads. So that's owned by a municipality in many cases. And so all of this shows that states have been quite active in airspace regulation. And as the Supreme Court has said in the past, property rights are typically determined at the state level. So you have this impending conflict of state law, which, and states have been very active in property rights and even airspace in the past, and federal law, which gives the FAA authority over navigable airspace. And in decades past, navigable airspace typically referred to, you know, where airliners fly, and maybe helicopters. But in a world of drones, suddenly navigable airspace becomes all the outdoor air around us. So it's a fascinating area. I'm glad that the senator is prioritizing this, because this uncertainty about state and federal relations is slowing up the industry.
So, Senator Lee, on that point, let me return to you. I know that Utah already has some interesting drone testing going on in your home state, and the question is, going forward, how will state and local leaders in Utah and in other states approach drone policy if your bill is enacted? And how would the relationship between federal and state regulators and policymakers, how would their interactions change if something like your bill is enacted?
Well, first of all, I appreciate the shout out to Utah. Utah has, in fact, been at the forefront of drone innovation. We have excellent leadership at our Utah Department of Transportation, or UDOT as it's known, and we have some pretty amazing local partnerships like Deseret UAS with people who are leading in testing drone technology. In particular, UDOT has been developing something called its Urban Air Mobility Project. They've started doing urban planning not only for drone package delivery, but also for eVTOL air taxis, or, as I like to put it, flying cars. Utah's at the cutting edge of creating and investing in an infrastructure system that will support this innovation. And as it relates to this bill, this would harmonize the respective interests of the state and local governments on the one hand with those of the federal government. It would do this in four principal ways. First, it would make clear that for airspace below 200 feet, state and local governments are responsible for managing drones by issuing time, place, and manner restrictions. And then the FAA would be responsible for the airspace above 200 feet. Second, DESA would protect the zoning authority for state and local governments to designate commercial drone takeoff and landing zones, similar to the authority that state and local governments currently possess to figure out where they're going to put airports. Third, DISA would give states and local governments an equal seat at the table with the federal government to develop the unmanned traffic management system. This is important not just for coordinating roles and responsibilities, but also to create a process, a system for sharing data between governments so that drone operators can have a clear and complete picture of the sky and what's in it, what other drones are up there, and so forth. And then finally, DISA clarifies that a commercial drone delivery company should not be considered an airline, as the FAA currently does. Receiving an airline certification, in this case under Part 135, is an expensive process, and it's one that could and otherwise will chill innovation and market competition. And so the classification would likely prevent state and local governments from responsibly managing commercial drone traffic at low altitudes, and that's why we feel it's so important to put this part in there. Now, I want to make a point on this final provision. The fact that the status quo essentially is one in which the FAA would consider commercial drone delivery carriers as an airline and make them receive a license as such is the biggest barrier to innovation and to entry into the marketplace that one can imagine. So, you know, it might be great if you're, say, for example, Amazon or Google or UPS, and you can afford an army of lawyers and lobbyists and compliance specialists to help you get to that point where you can receive a license as an airline. For everyone else, this is just going to chill innovation. And that's one of the reasons why we need DISA.
Yeah, I like that point, Senator. I think that's really important, and it's one of the reasons I like competitive federalism solutions so much, is that one of the problems with having a single point of control like the FAA is that a single point of control is also a single point of failure. And if that agency gets things wrong, there are some profound costs to overly precautionary regulatory approaches. But on the other hand, let me play devil's advocate and ask you a question that I often get when I advocate for competitive federalism solutions, which is that we'll often hear about the much-dreaded patchwork problem. Some critics might say that 50 different state policies is just 50 different regulatory headaches to sort through, or worse yet, competitive federalism approach might let some states shut down drone innovation altogether. How would you respond to that?
First of all, that is the most basic element of our form of government. It is federalism. It is the idea that, yeah, some states and localities are going to make stupid decisions, and people in those areas will suffer as a result. But that's why federalism works, because you've got these laboratories of representative government where people can experiment with different things, some of which will work and some of which will not. My other response there is that this is different than the type of patchwork quilt threat that you might have, say, in commercial passenger aviation, where you literally couldn't have a system of interstate flights, an interstate airspace that would work for commercial aviation unless you had a single uniform system. But as I mentioned earlier, that's where drones, while possessing some of the same hallmark characteristics as airplanes, they also possess other characteristics that make them very different. They do, in fact, involve the immediate reaches of airspace, as the Supreme Court put it in the Cosby case. And these are not places that you could call navigable airspace, as defined by Congress as the minimum altitudes of safe flight, which is generally set by regulation at 500 feet. So this necessarily, by its nature, because of the fact that we're talking about machines that can hover a few inches off the ground, there is no way, without doing violence not only to federalism but also to property rights, there's no way you can not incorporate the interests of states and localities.
Right, right. Well, Brent, let me turn back to you and ask you about this same question, and also mention that you've been writing about this lately in many different contexts, and our friends over at the Heritage Foundation had a nice report on cooperative federalism and low-altitude drone operations, where they said, when talking about the patchwork problem, that it may apply in some contexts, but they said, quote, in the drone context, however, it is overblown. Is the patchwork problem overblown, or are there other potential benefits that we should be looking at when we talk about this?
I think it is overstated somewhat. I mean, there is obviously some benefit in having one regulator to work with, but there are costs to that too. I know I've talked to small drone operators who don't have a DC presence and can't, as the Senator said, go through the current regulatory process, getting air carrier certification. But they believe, I mean, they could do that at a smaller level, at a state level, a local level, get permission to fly and start testing their drones and services. So, you know, there's a trade-off in both directions. And the fact is, states have regulated airspace in the past. There are other local and state issues at play, nuisance law, property law. There are infrastructure issues when it comes to drones, and so I think just necessarily, just pragmatically, states and localities will have to have a larger role to play when it comes to aviation, and when it comes to drones in particular, and also constitutionally. I mean, it's this is the system we have, and it's served us well. And I see some resemblance to telecommunications, which is kind of my background, where when you had cellular systems start popping up in the 80s and 90s, Congress had to necessarily give states and localities authority over, say, the siting locations of cell sites and time, place, and manner restrictions on when you can construct those. Even though, you know, telecom and, you know, large parts of telecom, like spectrum policy, is still federal. States and localities do have a big role to play when it comes to cellular systems and how they're sited, which is how those networks get built out. And the other thing, I think there is some precedent here, is in the 1950s, Congress passed the Submerged Lands Act, which gave states authority to land beneath coastal waters. And there they drew a line. 3 miles out, the land under the waters is controlled by the states for, say, oil or mineral operations. And that's because there was custom. There was states controlled that already, and Congress eventually had to come in and give states and localities a role in that. And so there is precedent here, and you know, there are costs in both ways, but with our constitutional system and just with the pragmatic issues dealing with nuisance and privacy and property rights, states and localities, I think necessarily will have a larger role to play.
Yeah. And Brent, briefly, the Senator mentioned eVTOL and its potential, the so-called flying cars potential. How does that play in briefly into this?
Yeah, I mean, if I can say a word just for listeners who might not follow this area, just where the industry is. So there are drone operations going on in many parts of the nation, but also globally. And some of these have been going on for years, are fairly developed. I think, and I fear that there's this leapfrog effect in technology, where middle-income countries surpass wealthier countries with some technologies, and I think we're seeing that with drone operations. Actually, the country of Rwanda has been doing drone deliveries. An American company called Zipline has been doing drone deliveries of medical blood throughout Rwanda. They do dozens of deliveries per day to about 24 hospitals throughout the country. China has had an extensive drone delivery system for years. It's fairly well developed, and with Chinese industrial policy, they believe they want to be the global leaders when it comes to drone standards and drone services, including, as Senator mentioned, this goes by various names: urban air mobility, flying cars, eVTOL. But the idea is passenger drones, basically big drones that carry people. And this is an area I've been following. This has been a promise for decades that we'll have flying cars eventually. And it looks like today, this will happen. I mean, the question is how big an industry will it be? But there are major players like Boeing and Airbus and Uber and also other global companies working on this.
Right.
In China, a company called Ehang, they've been flying tourists and they plan to start flying passengers. They have there's a two-passenger autonomous flying car that they've been using.
Right.
And they plan to get certifications done this year.
So, Senator, let me build on that point Brent made about the dangers of leapfrogging or sort of the international competitiveness concerns that we might have here, and ask you, are you concerned about that if your bill can't move? Because, of course, Congress is notoriously slow when it comes to policymaking on the technology front. We don't get a lot of legislation passed, unfortunately. And in this case, it seems like it's really needed. So what are your concerns there about how your bill and how this issue affects America's standing globally, competitively speaking?
Yeah, I'm terribly concerned about that. I mean, it ought to bother us that we're behind many countries, and not necessarily countries that we would ordinarily regard as our peer competitors in technology. It ought to concern us on a number of levels. And I think one of the problems associated with this is that in addition to the fact that Congress has been slow to act, it's slow to act in part because it's gotten into this habit over the last 80 years of delegating all of its lawmaking power to agencies like the FAA.
Right.
So one of the pushbacks I get from this bill is people say, well, we've got to wait and see how the FAA conducts the UAS Integration Pilot Program, or IPP as it's known. One of its purposes was to test and evaluate various models of state, local, and tribal government involvement in the development and enforcement of federal regulations for UAS operations. And that includes the testing of reasonable time, place, and manner limitations on low-altitude drone flights. I often hear folks tell me that IPP is supposed to shed more light on the appropriate role of state and local governments in drone integration, and that we should wait for that. This sounds great, but unfortunately, I've continued to question the FAA over how it has specifically tested state and local authority in the IPP process. And what I've found is that the FAA isn't testing this authority, and it appears to have no plans to do so in the future. So the FAA is missing a huge opportunity, since I think the states and cities are critical to the success of drone integration. So if we sit around and we wait for the FAA to act, and we wait for the FAA to conduct the IPP program, which it's not doing, at least this part of it, in the first place, we might be waiting forever. But even if we have to wait a few years, that's a few years longer than what we need to wait.
Right. I think that's a really essential point. The dangers of regulatory lag in this context are quite profound. And let me turn to Brent for a wrap-up point by you before turning to the senator to close us out and just ask you to comment on that and other concerns you have going forward.
Yeah, it's an exciting area. There's a lot of things going on. And unfortunately, the federal government isn't known for its speed, and that's what we need in this area. And the senator touched on it. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but you have this question of unmanned traffic management, UTM, which is basically air traffic control for drones. Our air traffic control system is not built to handle tens of thousands of drones and eVTOL and urban air mobility. So it's going to be a shock to the system, and I'm worried the way the FAA and NASA, which are kind of taking the lead on this UTM issue, I'm worried what they're pursuing is some of a dead end, this idea of a national unified system. I think it creates a lot of problems. I think it will slow up the industry. But
right.
just to wrap up, I mean, it's there's a lot going on. I expect and hope states and localities will take an interest in this area. I'm part of the, so Texas has created a connected autonomous vehicle task force. I'm a member of that, and they're taking up, in addition to autonomous vehicles on the roads, they're also looking at drones and eVTOL, and I think this, and I expect other states will follow suit. Because there is there are some major questions for states and localities dealing with nuisance, dealing with property rights, dealing with privacy, and it's it'd be best if they got ahead of this now.
Yeah. Thanks, Brent. And so, Senator, let me turn to you to close this out and ask you if you have any last thoughts or predictions, both about the future of drone operations and your legislation, and then also tell our listeners how they can find out more about your bill.
Thank you. And thanks again for this opportunity to speak to you about this important legislation. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, there are reasons why we need to pass DISA that relate to federalism. Principles already embodied within and already required by the Constitution. There are reasons related to the FAA's delay. There are reasons related to maintaining a competitive environment, one in which there aren't artificial regulatorily imposed restrictions on entry. There are also some practical reasons that shine light on one of the biggest arguments against reforms like this, the so-called patchwork quilt argument. Ignores the fact that, as a practical matter, you cannot imagine a world in which the FAA, or any federal agency for that matter, could take control of everything to everything from when a small town holds a parade and what drones are allowed to do on the parade route to people who use drones to interfere with someone's quiet enjoyment of their own property in their backyard or their swimming pool or something like that. These are the types of granular, on-the-ground pedestrian issues that no federal agency is ever going to be in a position to regulate comprehensively. So the idea of avoiding some type of federal of local regulation amidst the necessarily partially federal regulation that we'll have with drones is a pipe dream. We're never going to have that. What we can do here is facilitate the development of this technology and thereby harness the uses that are already emerging in areas like medicine delivery, agriculture, disaster relief, search and rescue missions, film, television, sports, and soon we're going to see a lot of consumer products being delivered to people's homes and thereby increasing their quality of life, expanding opportunities for persons with disabilities and people who otherwise just don't want to go outside. All of this is a whole lot more likely to happen and happen soon and bring the American people the benefits that can come from it if we just make clear at the outset where the delineations of power are. We know already that there are some local interests and some federal interests at stake. Let's just identify what those are. We think that DISA does a good job of that and look forward to getting it passed. Anyone who wants to learn more about it can go to my website at lee.senate.gov and read DISA and our explanations of it. We hope this has been helpful.
It's been very, very helpful, Senator, and thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. I'd like to thank Brent Skorup as well for joining me on the show. And on our page for today's episode on the Federalist Society website, we will link to the Senator's new bill, as well as Brent's recent essay that we talked about, and other material from Friends of the Federalist Society and other members of the Regulatory Transparency Project who've done good work on this issue. I want to also ask all of you in our audience to make sure to subscribe to the Fourth Branch Podcast on whatever podcasting platform you enjoy using to stay on top of all the breaking developments on this and other technology policy fronts. Until next time, see you later.
On behalf of the Federalist Society's Regulatory Transparency Project, thanks for tuning in to the Fourth Branch Podcast. To catch every new episode when it's released, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spreaker. For the latest from RTP, please visit our website at regproject.org. That's regproject.org.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.